Hello everyone, welcome back to Points to Defend for our first of many Wimbledon episodes. We're back and we're better, just like Wimbledon itself. It's really good to have it back after a year off. It feels like it's had a glow up and we've had a glow up as well.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of familiar faces returning to Wimbledon, just as we have. We got Murray, we got Kyrgios, we got Roger back. I know he's played a few tournaments before, but this is his home.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are waiting for Wimbledon to be their real moment.
Yeah, and especially someone like Murray, who obviously the home crowd. But let's just jump straight in. We sort of got two main talking points from the first and second round of Wimbledon. One slightly more positive than the other, so we figured we'd lead with the more negative one, just sort of get out of the way, because no one likes to see what happened, and it was sort of a common theme throughout the first round of matches.
Yeah, and I do wonder if it will get better as the tournament goes on, and obviously as the grass settles, but we really have had the highest of highs and the lowest of lows in the first couple of rounds, mostly with the two ends of the spectrum coming at the hands of two completely different players. And of course, we have to start by addressing what happened to Serena Williams in her first round match against Alexandra Šostaković, because it was just distressing and almost traumatizing to watch it unfold in front of your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, she's had strapping on her thigh for the last few tournaments now.
Yeah.
And she's obviously had a problem with it going into Wimbledon, but I mean, as we saw in every other tournament, it hasn't been putting her off enough to retire, but a common theme throughout these first two rounds is people slipping.
On the grass.
And Serena came out in this pretty incredible outfit.
Yeah, just...
You thought when she stepped out, like, this is going to be it.
That veil was very bridal, you know, and this is...
Very regal.
This is the tournament for her as well, I think. Especially in terms of, you know, we think that her best chances for a slam are Wimbledon in the US, but also with the US and even Australia, kind of the hard courts, these younger girls like Naomi and all them are doing better on the hard courts. And there's nobody who's a real proper, you know, consistent contender for Wimbledon the way she is.
And it's the same with the men's side as well, isn't
yeah.
it? You think the next gen just don't play well on grass.
And it's probably got something to do with, you know, them growing up and you don't really have a grass court probably unless you live in this country. And yeah, just the moment she stepped onto the court, there's that picture going around everywhere of her striding with her train behind her and her beats in and her bag on. And
then she played six games.
Yeah, we were... You know, we and she, more than anyone, were just completely robbed of what was no doubt going to be a very special tournament for her. She's made the final every time since pregnancy. You know, there's only been, I think, two Wimbledon since she returned to the tour from giving birth to Olympia. I think it's something like the last four or five Wimbledon she's made the final, if you go back even further. And obviously she won quite a few of the ones, 2016 and the ones before. But... She slipped on the grass, and this was immediately after a Federer-Mannarino match that we'll come on to later, which ended in retirement after Mannarino slipped on the grass.
And which that followed a Djokovic match in which he slipped a couple of times and Draper slipped a couple of times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this centre court is having a lot of problems and the players are just saying it's dangerous. But yeah, I mean, she just sort of changed in direction and just... her leg just completely went and
yeah.
it just sort of triggered that thigh injury she's got, and you could just see how much, I think half of it was the physical pain and half of it was the mental pain of knowing that she can't carry on.
Yeah, it was, you know, you knew exactly kind of what was going to happen. And the thing was, when you watched the slip happen in real time, it didn't look that bad because she found her footing and carried on the point. And then, you know, she was really struggling. She had to go off court for a medical timeout, which Serena very rarely takes medical timeouts or pulls out of a match in the middle of it. She will, you know, withdraw before or after a round, but she will very rarely do this. And you know, she went off court and everyone kind of held their breath because you thought, if this is this bad and she's already carrying an injury, is she going to be able to come back and carry out? And she tried to carry on and you thought, okay, until the second she stepped up to that baseline, she was sobbing her heart out, trying to serve. She did, you know, get through serving, but she then fell a second time, almost flat on her face, and it was... there's just no other word than distressing to watch. And it was one of those things where you almost wanted to watch through the gaps in your fingers because you don't want to take your eyes off of a Serena Williams match. But what was happening, you just you didn't actually want to watch it happen because you knew she was about to retire, and she did. And yeah, it was just such a scene and such a horrible scene to watch.
Yeah, and that draw also was one of the best chances she'll get to win another slam, because you think of the amount of people that sort of, and we'll touch on this in a bit, but the amount of people that firstly didn't even make it to the tournament.
Yeah.
Then also the amount of people that pulled out, and then the amount of people that lost within the first two rounds. The draw was sort of blown wide open for her. And yeah, I mean, you can't predict what would have been, but she obviously must have felt confident in herself to step out in that outfit.
Yeah, and I think even Patrick Mouratoglou has been saying, you know, this is such a devastating injury for her to pick up 6 games into her campaign, because she was here, she felt good, she was ready to fight. And I think the thing for me is, you know, right now there's a lot of talk and speculation with the likes of her, Venus, Andy, Federer, whether it's their last Wimbledon. And it's frustrating because I think it's taking away from, you know, the magic of seeing these players at this event. And she did do a very kind of emotional, prolonged goodbye wave on the court. I took that as, you know, she was just devastated that this was happening and that she was leaving so early, especially with Wimbledon not having happened last year. A lot of people are taking it as a retirement thing. I don't want to, you know, I don't think we should spend too much time on that, because it is just all speculation and we should enjoy these people while we have them. But it's tough when things like this happen as is, and in the narrative of the 24 thing, I think it just makes it even worse.
Yeah, it sort of not adds fuel to the fire, but you think when Serena steps out on a Grand Slam, everyone sort of perceives it as her chasing this sort of fabricated record,
yeah,
that she doesn't need to get
at all.
And yeah, it feels like from the wider perspective, she's not playing, I mean, the fans and the critics think that she's not playing tennis for the love of it anymore. She's playing it to chase this record, but she wouldn't be playing unless she enjoyed it. And I think in her own head, she just wants to push herself and sort of, it's the same with Roger. He doesn't care about getting 21.
Yeah, they just want to win a slam because they want to.
They want to prove themselves against the younger guys and prove that at their age, they can still sort of kick it with everyone.
Definitely. And she's made countless Grand Slam finals since she came back from giving birth to Olympia. And I remember kind of within the first year of her comeback, Patrick said something like, you know, 24 is not a goal. The goal is 25. The goal is 30. The goal is limitless, and it's whatever she can do. And as a, you know, I'm a big fan of Serena. I pick her to win every Grand Slam she enters. I picked her to win this one because I can't go against 23 singles, let alone the doubles, the mix, the Olympic gold medals and singles and doubles. And I'm at the point now where, you know, I did get caught up in the 24 thing, because it is tough to see someone who is so incredible be judged so harshly by, like you said, a fabricated goal that doesn't matter and actually wasn't the goal until she got to 23 and the critics decided to move the goalposts to Margaret Court. And yeah, it's just, it robs her of her achievements. It makes moments like this worse because it's not Serena coming into a Grand Slam, it's Serena coming into the quest for 24. And then when something like this happens, it's hampering her chances at getting 24 rather than just a devastating moment within itself.
And I think also the thing that people forget is that you'll never find another player like her. You'll never find someone that matches the same amount of slams, both in singles and doubles. You'll never find someone that sort of transcends the sport as much as Serena Williams does. So,
and the stuff that her and Venus have done to get where they are now in terms of, you know, equality, all the hardships they had to face to get here. They've been winning slams since they were a lot younger than the two of us are now. They were winning slams since before we were born. And
yeah,
you're
kinda
just not going to find that again.
Yeah, and you're kind of, every time you talk about 24, it kind of detracts from the incredible achievements that she has already.
Absolutely.
Which, I mean, no one is, if it's not her, no one's going to hit 24 slams. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I mean, but we shouldn't be sort of scapegoating her and pigeonholing her into saying, oh, she needs to hit 24 slams. You should just celebrate Serena Williams for the fact that she's got 23 singles, God knows how many doubles.
Yeah,
and
I think when you count them all, it gets to in the 30s and 40s off the top of my head. I don't know,
and
but
that's the important thing. The fact that she sort of is this one in a million tennis player. I mean, you got three of them on the men's side, but yeah, at least in the WTA.
Well, even they haven't got double slams the way she does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there'll never be another one like her. And I think for the British crowd, there'll never be another one like
Andy Murray, which we thought we were going to be robbed of. You know, it is just, I keep coming back to this. I pull up this moment on Twitter every so often when he does something good. I've already said it during this tournament. I say it sometimes on this podcast. It was more than 2.5 years ago now, roughly 2.5 years ago. He sat in a press conference room in Melbourne, could barely even speak through his tears, crying his eyes out, saying he was done, not because he wanted to be, but because his body was done, and he wanted to make it to Wimbledon for his goodbye, and he didn't even think he could do that. And then he played that match against Bautista Agut, and it was just truly devastating, you know, the same as seeing Serena be hampered by this injury 6 games into a quest for a Grand Slam, which I think to people like us now is just, you know, Serena comes to a Grand Slam, we wanted to win it, just to win a Grand Slam, not to win 24. Yeah. And it was the same with Andy in terms of him at Australia a couple of years back. And we never thought we'd see this again.
Yeah,
at
all. I mean, he's come back to Wimbledon. Well, firstly, he came back to Queens. And I mean, you're never going to find an Andy Murray like a Wimbledon Andy Murray.
Oh, yeah. And it just gets this whole country going. And I think especially, you know, everyone says this about everything at the moment. After the last year and a half we've all been through, this is what we need, what we deserve, what he needs and deserves, you know, add on to the fact that he's had all these problems. But, you know, if you could take the two separately, dealing with the pandemic and dealing with the injuries he's had, it would just be incredible to have him back like this with the full, well, not the full crowd, but the 50% crowd. And yeah, he's just given us the best moments of this Grand Slam by far.
And even if he goes out in the next round, which, I mean, he could do, and we'll touch on that in a bit. Yeah, I mean, his first two victories, and I mean, what a victory it could have been in the first place against Basilashvili.
Yeah.
So he was 6-4, 6-3, 5 love up.
Serving for it. Serving for the bagel, which had, was just...
Had multiple match points, I'm pretty sure, throughout the set. And then eventually lost 7 games in a row. And everyone was thinking, oh my God, what is going on? He also slipped a couple of times.
Yes, and you know, I think with Andy, for the last 5 years, everyone's been like, how does he walk? He's got a limp. He's doing this. He's doing that. And I think at this point, it is just the way he walks. And we're all reading into it. But
and it wasn't
when
even...
Andy falls, you hold your breath.
Yeah, it wasn't even his hip that was the problem when he fell. It was his groin. But then I think what's more impressive is you can talk a lot about losing 7 games in a row, whatever. But how many players, and especially the younger lot, would come back and win that fourth set 6-3?
Yeah, immediately come back like that. He said it himself in press after, you know, he's not happy with the fact that he lost 7 games in a row. And Andy,
yeah, who would?
Andy will know. Andy's always going to find a reason to not be happy with himself. Even when he's leading by a lot, he'll be shouting himself, which is the great Andy Murray thing we love to see happen on the court. But he said it as well. You'll be hard-pressed to find players that would just immediately respond like that and come back and win that fourth set. And like you said, however the victory would have gone, whether it was a bagel or it was what it was with a 6-3 fourth set.
I mean, even if he lost as well, to be 2 sets 5-love up, I mean, it would have been...
Against the 24th seed.
It would have been a devastating loss, but to be in that position as well after not playing, playing something like 6 matches or whatever it is, would have been incredible. But yeah, he obviously closed it out. And then, like, squashed any rumours of a potential retirement after Wimbledon very savagely.
Yeah, he had a great on-court interview, you know. We just spoke about it with Serena. There's been all this speculation about multiple people's last Wimbledon, and he just gave it, you know, I hate hearing people talk about this. I love this. I'm going to keep doing it as much as I love it. He then told us that in the break for the roof to be closed, he said he went to have a shower, he went to the toilet, he told us he only did a number one, don't worry everyone. And then he was a bit savage to Basilashvili, which we appreciate for obvious reasons that we won't go into, and I'm sure Andy kind of has that motive behind him too, being the feminist icon he is. Gave it the he's ranked like 20th in the world and I just beat him, so
yeah. I mean, and then his second match, obviously not as good an opponent, but definitely pushed him a lot harder, and that
probably,
I mean,
a better match.
No one, you can't say why. I mean, Otter, who I think wildcarded into the tournament, or at least qualified,
yeah,
ranked 114th, somewhere around that in the world.
Definitely the lowest ranked combined centre court billing we've had.
Yeah, I mean, took him to 5 sets and then got the 2 middle sets 6-4, Otter did, and then sort of Andy kicked on. But yeah, it it was a good match for Andy, not because necessarily the way he played. I'd say definitely in the Bash/Philly match he played better, but the support he got from that centre court when the roof closed, when it was night time, when he was a couple of sets down and everyone was sort of jeering him on and you could see him just screaming with people in the audience, not at them, but sort of embracing their attitude. And I don't think he'd have won either match if he wasn't on centre court.
Oh, definitely.
And I think he knows that as well. And I think that will be a very big factor in his next match because he plays Shapovalov, which on paper, he should lose. Like, Dennis is having a very good grass court season. Obviously lost to Ruud in the final. I'm not too sure where. But yeah, Ruud picked up a grass court title over Dennis. And he's made a couple of quarterfinals. I think a semi in there. And yeah, you look at it on paper and Dennis should walk Andy.
I personally think it's going to be the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, you never know with that centre court. You never know with that sort of... You say 50% capacity, but everyone is sat in the lower seats.
Yeah.
Everyone is screaming at him, and there's never been support like this with everyone having the 2 years off, with the tickets going on more of a general sale. So you've got that sort of varied audience. You've got people from different backgrounds. You've got everything.
Yeah, you've got people that probably never in their wildest dreams thought they'd get to go to Wimbledon, and they're embracing every moment of it. And you've got Andy, who thought he might never be back at Wimbledon, embracing that.
And you put the two together, and it just makes this sort of...
It's very US Open Arthur Ashe night session, and we don't have night sessions here at Wimbledon. In fact, we have a curfew from the local council, but
yeah, it's very
it
like,
feels like a night session. It's,
it feels very like almost patriotic. It feels very like getting behind your countrymen, just spurring him on no matter who he's going to play. And I think
he's Scottish, but it feels very, it's coming home vibes. I think it helps that we have the Euros. It almost feels like a repeat of 2018 because we have such a great Wimbledon going on right now. We have Love Island back that everyone's also missed for a year, the way we did with Wimbledon. We have the Euros, and it's just the vibes are like the same almost across everything. It's how you feel in the centre court is the same as you feel watching England have these wins. It's probably the same everyone felt on Monday when Love Island came back.
It's not quite the same as watching England. I will put that out there. As a diehard football fan, there's no feeling like watching England win.
But then I think the equivalent for me is watching these Andy wins, you know. It's just, it brings tears to my eyes to be so elated to see vintage Andy Murray. This is the Andy Murray I used to watch when I was younger, when I was about 16, and I used to watch him, you know, be our British favourite for Wimbledon when he won in 13 and 16.
When he won the Olympics.
Yeah, he is the reason I got into tennis, is watching him at Wimbledon, and that's all I used to watch for a few years until I gradually got more into it, and I can see exactly why. And I really hope there are, you know, younger people out there watching these matches thinking, oh, maybe I should pay a bit more attention.
But yeah, from one return at Wimbledon to another, and the return of Nick Kyrgios.
Yes, who has played even less than Andy this year, I think.
And won just the same amount. Yeah, I think Nick obviously went out in the Australian Open to team in five.
And I don't think he's played since because he doesn't want to travel. He did sign up, you know, he was very vague about playing. I think he entered some tournaments, but essentially said he wasn't going to travel. Entered the Mallorca grass court tournament that they actually made a big deal out of the fact that, you know, he's finally going to travel for this, and then didn't, and he's finally travelled and it's for Wimbledon. And yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
if
there's
the one he made the exception for.
If there's one tournament that you can get Nick off his ass for and get him to play, it's Wimbledon. And I mean, he started very well. You think Humbera just won Haller, just beat Rublev in the final of Haller, so, and he's what, 22nd seed, something like that?
Definitely very high. And then, of course, they had their Australian Open match earlier this year at essentially Nick's only tournament this year.
The only reason Nick won that was the crowd.
Oh, yeah. The same with Andy. You know, this crowd loves him. I think that match ended up being carried over because of that council curfew we mentioned. And this isn't even a COVID thing, everyone. This is just
the
this
rowdy
is just
Wimbledon
England.
Fans.
This is just local councils ruining our fun. But yeah, so it was almost the same as Australia as well, where Nick came back from being 1-2 sets down, and that caught one crowd in the evening, as you know, Nick won that fourth set 6-1 as well, comfortably, to take it to a fifth. Everyone was a bit worried they were going to get kicked out. They got six games of the fifth set, and yeah, same vibes as Andy, where the roof was shut, the lights were on, the pims were flowing, and yeah.
I mean, yeah, and they obviously came back and played the rest of it the next day. And Nick in the tunnel was just like, I'm so tired. I just want to go back and have a beer. And then on court, you could see that he was a little bit, I'd say agitated for Nick. He was just pissed off and he was smacking the ball away. I'm pretty sure at one point, and I don't know if anyone picked up on this, a ball kid threw him the ball and he hit it back at her, but obviously didn't hit her.
Yikes, Djokovic, US Open.
In classic Kyrgios fashion. But, I mean, he closed out and won it 9-7.
Yeah.
And the thing is with Nick is even if he's fatigued, even if he's tired, even if he's stopped caring, he's got that serve that can just pick him up a whole game.
Especially on the grass. Though, he was picked up by the microphones. Not even picked up. Oh, he addressed the microphones.
He was saying it to the
He said, everyone at home, just so you know, the court's very slow. This is so slow. They need to trim the grass. They need to water it. This is not real grass court tennis. Grass court tennis is meant to be fast. But he still won, so...
And then he won his next round earlier today in three sets.
Yeah, he got very routined. It was against Gianluca Maga. He won it. First set tiebreak was 9-7, so pretty competitive. And then 6-4, 6-4. He's almost, you know, bar those little outbursts and stuff, which it actually feels like he's managing to keep not off the court because they're happening on the court, but not during his actual games. In the games, in the match, he seems quite professional.
And that's the thing with Nick is he's got that sort of, not limitless potential, but you just wonder how good he'd be if he sort of knuckled down, if he got a coach. If essentially he wasn't Nick Kyrgios. Yeah.
But then this is the beauty of Nick, and I don't think, and you I know, think, he I wouldn't think, have crowd support the way he does if he was normal.
And I think the thing about Nick is, I think more than winning slams, I think he wants to leave an impression.
Yeah.
And I think he wants to sort of, he's obviously always been very outspoken about how much he doesn't like the sport, and I guess that sort of stems from like how it is as a sport, you think. It's a very sort of, the way tennis was in the past is very like regimented.
Elitist.
And yeah, Nick's sort of changing that and he's making it fun. And you think back to like his Cincinnati title where he's asking fans where he wants them to.
He did that today, apparently. We were, of course, watching the Federer Gasquet match that we'll get onto, but I've seen on Twitter that he's brought that back in today's match. So,
good. Yeah. It's fun.
This is what we love about him. And I think it's really good this year, like we've already said. The fact that the crowd's been able to buy tickets online, potentially that's made the overall average kind of attendance age of Wimbledon this year slightly lower. And it's people that appreciate that, not people that are going to turn their noses up and go, oh, it's such a bad example for the children. Because first of all, parent your own children. Like, Nick's not there to parent them. But yeah, Nick just wouldn't be Nick without this. He's given his on-court interview, said he just wants to get back to the hotel and play COD with his girlfriend. And I think it is helping him that he has his girlfriend here with him.
Oh, definitely.
And this is, I think, the first time they travelled together because they probably got together during the pandemic last year anyway. And yeah, it's good enough to see him like this. We're also going to see him on the mixed doubles court with none other than the queen herself, Venus Williams. So if the crowd isn't good enough now, wait for that next.
In his press conference, he said that apparently Venus has been wanting to play doubles with him for a while.
There is a video of her saying it.
Apparently, someone asked her if there's one person she'd like to play doubles with, who would it be? And she said Nick Kyrgios, and he was very sort of smug to that fact. But Nick said in his press conference, I can't remember if it was today or yesterday or whenever, that it is his dream to play mixed doubles with one of the Williams sisters. And, I mean, Venus, most appearances at a Grand Slam in history, like, I mean, they're going to make a hell of a team. And she obviously played with Coco in a tournament before. So she's sort of not spreading herself in, but she's trying out all these new doubles partners. And yeah, it's good to see. And I think the thing with Nick is he's very outspoken about tennis and everything, but he has his idols.
I think he
absolutely adores Andy Murray.
Yeah.
He absolutely loves the Williams sisters. He's got such respect for Roger.
Yeah.
Rafa, maybe not as much, but I think he respects him
a lot.
And I think when you sort of, and that's why he always plays better against the big three, and you think Djokovic has never beat him. He's youngest person, I think, to beat Nadal at Wimbledon or something crazy like that.
Yeah, very low ranked at the time.
Incredible matches with Roger at like the Laver Cup and everything. You think he just, when Nick is in the presence of a sort of massive star, he turns it on. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he is in doubles with Venus.
Yeah, because they'll be on the same side of the net and it's not going to be them against each other. He's just, he's going to, you know, bounce off it so much. I don't know if you saw his Instagram story, but apparently Venus in her press said, yeah, I'm just going to let him do all the work. And he put it on his story and said, don't worry, I'll run through a brick wall for you. So
yeah, it's good to see Nick happy. It's good to see him embracing tennis and enjoying it. And you, when he has that perfect blend of sort of like cocky and charismatic but also enjoying it, I think that's when he's at his best. Let's go to pretty polar opposites. You go from Nick Kyrgios to
class, grace, elegance, Federer on grass.
Roger Federer, what a man. And I mean, the tennis he's playing may not be the best, but
Is it just me, or was he actually better at Roland Garros on the clay than he's been at Wimbledon so far?
It's weird because Federer's comeback, and it's been spread over sort of the period of 2021. You think he came back in Doha, beat Evans,
yeah,
lost to Basashvili, came back on the clay. He played a tournament
in between. Geneva.
Yes, he played Geneva and lost to Andujar.
Yeah.
Then played Halle, lost to Felix,
yeah,
but beat Ivashka.
Yeah, his first round. He was very good in the first round, but Roland Garros, was it Kopfer that he played that incredible third round against? And he was still going at this empty crowd, 12:30 a.m., gone midnight, 1-4, really pulled it back. Looked the way he did the US Open in 2018 where he lost to John Millman. Looked red, sweaty, patchy. Don't know what's in those Uniqlo tops, but they're not good for him. But his first two rounds there, he looked flawless. And I thought, oh my God, he's going to win Wimbledon. And the first two rounds of Wimbledon haven't matched that.
And the thing with Roland Garros is they're two very different opponents as well. And oh, no offence to the glasses-wearing bloke, but I cannot remember his name.
What, Dennis Istomin?
Yes, him. yeah, walked through him in the first round, and then Cilic. Big serves, big hits.
That's been a Grand Slam final a few times.
Exactly. And managed to get through him. And Cilic is not ranked the same as he was when he won his Grand Slam, but he's still a tough opponent.
Especially now on the grass.
Yeah, and also on the clay as well. And Roger did incredibly. But yeah, these first two rounds of Wimbledon. So the Mannarino match.
Tough draw. I'll give him that. Very tough first round.
Yeah, Mannarino. And it was his birthday as well.
Yeah.
Not the present he would have hoped for. And we'll sort of touch on the whole slipping debacle now, because Mannarino also had to retire through injury.
Literally half an hour before Serena.
Yeah, through slipping on centre court. You had Djokovic slip on centre court. You had Jack Draper. You had Andy Murray. You had Federer slip today.
You've had people slipping on other courts as well. I think Sloane slipped almost the same time as Andy yesterday.
Yamur slipped as well.
Yes, he's just slipped.
Isner got injured. It's crazy what's going on, and no one really knows why.
Well, I think it doesn't help, obviously, the courts haven't been played on for 2 years. They've said that we know full well we've had a disgusting, atrocious spring here in the UK, especially when you compare it to last year. Last year we had a heat wave. This year we literally, in the spring itself, torrential rain, 12 degrees every day. So it doesn't help. One thing that's very interesting to me that Sam Smith said on the BBC Wimbledon broadcast the other day, she doesn't understand why manufacturers aren't making shoes for it. Because there's only so much you can do in terms of nature.
Medvedev's.
Yes.
Is.
He's
Medvedev
the only one.
Medvedev has tiny little spikes in his shoes. And the thing with that is, it's sort of the same as wearing football boots, but obviously not to the same extent. You risk not pushing off as fast because you might get sort of a little bit stuck in the grass.
Yeah.
But in terms of traction, yeah. It's an interesting one, but then at the same time, people have been wearing these shoes on grass for God knows how many years. And would you adjust it just for a single Wimbledon? You think there's never been a tournament with slippages like this?
There was a few years ago, I think there was a Wimbledon where people slipped, not to the extent of this one. But then you can make the same argument as racket technology has changed, you know, kind of even the material of the clothes, Nike Dry Fit, that kind of thing. It's all changed. Sam Smith was saying on Wimbledon, you get these incredible running shoes now that are just the lightest ever and the fastest ever. And how are you not almost having different shoes for different surfaces in tennis? Because the three surfaces are insanely different.
You do have different shoes because clay court shoes are really heavy.
But I don't know, more so than that. And I do think, you know, you should have, she said this as well, maybe different shoes for the earlier rounds when the grass is very soft compared to the later rounds where it's broken in and it's a bit more dusty and stuff and the grass has come off. So
right, he's just signed with On Running. They're not there yet. But yeah, let's talk about more Federer's performance. A 6-4 in the first set against Mannarino.
Looked normal.
Not normal.
Okay, no. Looked like he picked up the first set, so he was probably going to pick up the next two, and lost the next two.
Well, second set, pretty even set, and in the breaker, my God, was Federer
bad. Awful. Went so away.
And the thing with Roger is, and just through watching these first two rounds, he's very tentative. So he's not hitting the ball as hard, and especially in his backhand, and sort of when he's going for it, he's framing it a lot.
Yeah.
And he's just sort of hitting these loopy backhands that are going out, and you can see it's just sort of a lack of adjusting to different situations, which you just pick up during match play. But yeah, then in the fourth set against Mannarino, sort of came back into his own and was looking like he was going to cruise
to
victory.
I'm pretty sure he was a break up.
No, in the fourth set, he won it 6-2.
Sorry, in the third set, I'm pretty sure Roger was a break up before Mannarino won it 6-3. And then, yeah, Roger really did finally dial up. I do think whether or not Mannarino had slipped, Roger would have ran away with that next set, either 6-love, 6-1 or 6-2. But he can't afford to drop his level for middle two sets in that, like, in later rounds. You know, it's not going to cut it against... He's got Norrie next, maybe not Norrie,
and
but
then
beyond
Medvedev.
That. Yeah, the likes of Medvedev, Berrettini's in his half, who is just the king of grass this season, undefeated on the grass this season. He's not going to cut it. He could potentially do it in his next round against Norrie, and then that's it. It will not do it. And he kind of did it today against Gasquet, so...
Well, yeah, the Gasquet match was weird because in the first set, he looked like he did in the middle two sets against Mannarino.
Yeah.
And he looked like, because he's Roger Federer and because he's probably the greatest tennis player of all time, he did enough playing badly to take it to a tiebreak.
Yeah.
And walked that and then carried that over into the second set where he won 6-1 in vintage Roger Federer style, classic on the grass, sort of... Everything was going right, even if scuffs were going in, his backhand was looking potent, everything was right. And then, final set 6-4, a little bit nervy. Sort of, he had a chance to win it on Gasquet's serve at 5-3.
Yeah.
Pretty sure they were in a deuce and just couldn't convert.
I think he may have had match points
as
well.
He had one match point. And it's a weird one because you want to see Roger do well at Wimbledon, but I think we're all getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. And he's 40 years old, basically, isn't he? He's had double knee surgery, he hasn't played this year. It's just, we all think that he's a guarantee to make the final, and I think the only person that is realistic about his expectations
is
Roger himself. And I mean, I think he'll do enough to beat Norrie.
Oh yeah.
Norrie's having a fantastic season as well, that's got to
and
be said.
The Queen's final.
Yeah.
Not just the season overall, but the grass season, he's been very, very good, you know. I don't think it's enough to trouble Roger, even if we have a Roger with some dips. But like you said, that 6-1 set is what we've been waiting to see from him this tournament. And hopefully he can take from this win, see the things that he did well there and translate it for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, and what he said in his press conference is they asked him that, when is this your best level? Are you happy with the level you're playing? And
he said, I don't know.
But he said, I don't know. It doesn't matter if you play your best tennis in the first two rounds. Just don't get knocked out. It's second week that matters. And I think that he will not adjust his game, but I think Roger Federer in the second week of Wimbledon is when we'll see. I also think he'll play better against the better players.
Oh, yeah. I think he's going to do a bit of a Serena. You see it a lot with her because she's so selective and choosy with her schedule. She barely plays apart from the Grand Slam. She comes into a Grand Slam. She uses the first three-ish rounds to play herself into form against these lower-ranked opponents. So by the second week, she can beat, you know, all these higher-ranked people. Svitolina, she's had in the semi-finals at the US Open a couple of years ago. So it feels like Roger's doing that almost, where he hasn't had as much tour match play.
Yeah, well, let's move on from Roger Federer to probably who's going to win Wimbledon.
Yeah, and everyone's favourite. On track for the calendar Golden Slam with the Olympics on this year.
And you know what?
Probably going to do it.
And he probably deserves Novak Djokovic. I mean, he is truly untouchable at the moment.
Apart from Jack Draper for a little bit.
Yeah, obviously, coming into Wimbledon, making the Mallorca doubles final, but also just beating Rafa on clay at Roland Garros. And that's all we'll say about that because we don't need to talk about that anymore. It's incredible. But yeah, lost the first set of Wimbledon to Jack Draper, who was playing...
He's had a great grass season.
He beat Sinner.
And he beat someone else really good.
I'll get on to Sinner in a bit because I'm not happy. But yeah, lost the first set to Jack Draper and everyone was a bit like, okay. And he did slip a couple of times, Djokovic. But then in classic Djokovic fashion, sort of just... bullied the kids.
He likes to give them hope. He likes to give them one, sometimes two sets, and then just turns it around.
Like Tsitsipas.
And someone else at Roland Garros, I've already forgotten.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, oh, Musetti.
Yes.
Two tie breaks he lost against Musetti, but then stormed him in the last few, made him retire.
Oh yeah, he was so injured. Embarrassed. He just wanted to get off the court. I mean, that's just dirty behaviour.
Yeah, the thing is with Djokovic is you can say what you want about him off the court. You can judge his actions, you can judge his lifestyle, the way he conducts and handles himself.
The way he spreads coronavirus across Serbia.
But on the court, it pains me to say it, but he will have the most slams.
He will.
And he will be regarded as the best because you think Federer has this elegant style, Rafa has this sort of dogged brute force, but Djokovic, there's nothing he's bad at.
He's just solid. He's very, you know, I haven't actually watched him play, firstly because it's
you
a guarantee that he's going to routine. Yeah, exactly. You don't have to. It's a guarantee he's going to routine these people. His tennis is arguably boring to watch because, it, like
so
you said,
dull.
Federer and Nadal have the kind of the elegance versus the all or nothing, life or death style on the points. Djokovic is just solid. You know, there are no holes in his game. He plays to the book. If you wanted to teach anyone tennis, you just show them Djokovic, and he's so regimented in doing everything that you should do. Absolutely textbook, technically perfect, and. Yeah, he beat Kevin Anderson today, 6-3, 6-3, 6-3, or was it yesterday, sorry, in a rematch of what was the 2018 final here. You know, Kevin Anderson did not actually even pick up a set in that final either, but he made a couple Grand Slam finals a few years back. You know, he was a big contender on the tour a few years back, and it was interesting to see how it was going to go, and
you never
Djokovic
know with these,
rolled him.
Yeah, you never know with these former Grand Slam finalists, a bit like Cilic against Federer at Roland Garros. You never know what's going to happen because they've proved they're good enough in the past. You never know, an upset maybe on the cards, but yeah, he's just so just routinely good at the moment, Djokovic. And in your prediction, you don't have him making the final.
Well, I had him losing to Tsitsipas in the semi-final. Tsitsipas is already gone, so yes, there's that. I really thought Tsitsipas was going to do well here because it was a mini breakthrough for him at a slam back in 2018. He did quite well, made, I think, third or fourth round, and then lost, and then went off and had that. If some people remember, you won't, but he went off and had this like trip alone, this solo trip where he reinvigorated himself, very Tsitsipas style. I just thought he was going to get the revenge.
And he's also just come off the Roland Garros final. He's also just come off his first Grand Slam
final. Well, I was going to say, his nan died 5 minutes before the Roland Garros final, and he wasn't told until a couple of hours after he got off court, which is something that's been mixed up in terms of being reported. But this, you know, he's a very... It's horrific for anyone, but the way he feels things and the way he's very philosophical about things
he's
and
a sensitive
emotional,
person,
very
isn't
sensitive.
He?
His nan died 2 weeks ago. I am not surprised.
I'm surprised he's even here.
Yeah.
But to step on court and fight through it, I mean, obviously not the result he'd have wanted, and we'll touch on the next gen point now because I've got a bone to pick with Sinner. But yeah, grass obviously not his favoured surface. I'd probably say it's clay. But yeah, I mean, just to even come to Wimbledon to make the travel to quarantine. To be
yeah,
the bubble.
So yeah, the bubble life is tough and they're all speaking about it. I can do it.
Yeah, I mean, fair play to him. But let's move on to, I'm just going to quickly touch on it. Jannik Sinner, what is going on? Like, I can accept the Wimbledon loss because it's to Fucsovic, who's like, we mentioned
it's
this in
Fucsovic,
the
Fucsovic Rublev is the
yeah.
matchup of the year.
We mentioned it in a couple of our earlier podcasts. Fucsovic is always just about.
He's
always
2021 kind of like dark horse, him, Karatsev, now Nori, I would say.
But the thing is with Sinner is he got the first set and he was looking at artists. And then Queens, he lost to Draper.
Draper was at home.
Oh, just...
I mean, Jack Draper has been absolutely great. You know, I've always liked him. I think he made the boys' final in 2018, and that's when he went on my radar. Him, and let's quickly touch on her as well, Emma Raducanu.
Are we done on my sin a bit?
I think you just need to put it to bed and forget about it because it's too painful for you.
Oh,
but yeah, I've always, you know, we've been pushing people like Nori, obviously, rightfully so. We've been pushing people like Harriet Dart, Katie Swan, Katie Balter. For me, it's always been Emma Raducanu, and she's proving it because she won her first round, and today she's beaten a former Roland Garros finalist, Marketa Vondrousova, in very routine fashion. So these young Brits, it's very good to see, because there's a lot that's been made within the British press about the fact that the LTA never capitalised on Murray's period of dominance from about 2012 to 2017, 16, 17. You know, they didn't invest into getting people actually playing tennis based off of watching Andy. And I think we're finally seeing some sort of translation with Draper and Emma.
I mean, you say that also. Dan Evans is having a great tournament.
I mean, he was already about when
I know,
Andy
but
was
I'm just saying, the Brits are doing well. Not on the WTA side as much, you think. Obviously.
Well, Emma's our only one left. Konta had to go with close contact.
Watson, Dart, yeah.
Walter, Swan. Katie Walton nearly beat Sabalenka. And to be fair, I thought she was going to, because we know what Sabalenka's like in a Grand Slam.
But Norrie, Evans and Murray.
First time in years that we've had three British men in round
and
three.
Two of them are seeded. Norrie is seeded. Cam Norrie is seeded for Wimbledon. Which
Cam Norrie has some of the highest win totals
yeah,
of years.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
Season.
Behind Sitsipasen Rublev, I think. But yeah, that actually quickly, we'll just touch on this. The top 10 in WTA, only three of them are left.
Comebacks later in the year, because we've lost a lot of people.
Yeah, you think Naomi obviously didn't play because of everything that's happened off the court, and
which I think one day we will sit down and speak about properly, because we didn't at the time, and now is not the time, but there are a lot of thoughts on that. Good for her, I'm glad she's missing it.
Yeah, it really, really like sort of sticks it to them. Halep wasn't fit.
Halep pulled out 2 minutes before the draw ceremony.
Yeah, she didn't recover.
I am devastated for her, because she was robbed of that moment of when you're the defending champion, you open play on centre court. The man does it on the Monday, the woman does it on the Tuesday, and yeah, she earned it so much in that final, and she was so excited.
What was it? Something like six unforced errors or something stupid.
The whole
like
match.
Yeah.
For the whole match. She came here, she was practicing, she took that picture. There was a life-size kind of thing on a pillar of her holding the trophy. She took a picture holding a mask over her face, being like, haha, 2021. And bless her, 2 minutes before the draw, she pulled out with the, I think, calf injury that she picked up in Rome that also saw her miss Roland Garros. That's now going to see her miss the Olympics.
Yeah, and then we lost, obviously we talked about Serena out in round one, Andreescu and Kvitova both out in round one.
Kvitova to Sloane Stephens, so fair enough, because
it
was a tasty first round.
Stephens is having a great
year. Yeah, good for her.
Kenin, who, I mean, she's got...
I think she set a record of the most unforced errors per minute in a match.
Yeah, it was something stupid. She's got to drop out of the top 10 soon. I'm sorry, she's clinging on to a couple of Grand Slam finals.
Yeah, well, she's clinging on to the 2019... I don't really understand what's going on with the points. I'm not going to lie. That's the one thing where I really haven't educated myself on how it's working right now. But
yeah,
she's also now not playing the Olympics because she said she can't do the bubble there.
Yeah, and then Alina also. Just, you never know.
Alina lost badly today to Magdalena, defending semi-finals here. So
she's out of the top 10, we think. And so Simona. Yeah, the points
so
are weird.
Pushma's doing well.
We've got three left in Ash Barty. It was down a break today in the first set from the first game. But,
well, she got broken a few times today.
Sabalenka, who, as we said, nearly lost to Katie Porter, and Świątek, who...
I had her to lose in the first round because she was playing Shea.
And I had her to make the final.
so two complete polar opposites. I'm really happy for her doing this well because, you know, you don't expect it. There are a lot of people this grass season on the WTA that are literal Grand Slam champions, i.e. her and Bianca Andreescu, that never had a tour level match on win. Tour level win on grass. And they came at Eastbourne. Big up Eastbourne down the road.
Yeah, and also about Świątek, just a weird little fact. She switched racket provider in the last year. She's now with Technify, but like Medvedev.
Wasn't she Babylon?
No, I think she might have been Head or something like that. But yeah, she swapped racket provider and obviously didn't make
I
that
I need
much
her
of a
to
difference.
Swap clothing sponsor because ASICS are doing her dirty. I'm very surprised Nike and Adidas haven't snapped her up.
Someone will.
She's a hot young property. Like, yeah, she can be a proper face for them the way Nike kind of snatched Naomi. Coco Gauff's got to be. For someone soon. Her and New Balance have a good thing going, but
We'll end on a couple of sort of like bittersweet retirements, not yet, but
final Wimbledon in singles
to Carla Suarez Navarra and Kiki Burton. So
which Kiki's gone under the radar, but we will start with Carla because
it's been a story.
You know, she came back at Roland Garros after recovering from cancer, which is just incredible. You know, she is one of the most liked people on the tour. She's kind of got a Petra Kvitova vibe about her. There is nobody that could ever say a bad word about her. You know, every fan, every pundit, every player, everyone loves her. And I think 2020 was meant to be her kind of retirement year, her farewell tour. Obviously got snatched away from her, so that was meant to be this year. Part of that snatched away from her from the cancer. Absolutely incredible that she made a comeback at Roland Garros and was robbed there because they put her in a night session.
Yes.
Where she had no crowd. So I'm really, really happy for her. Like we touched on with Simona, didn't get to open the court as the defending champion. So Carla Suarez Navarro drew world number one and probably one of the favourites for the title, given all the people dropped out now. Ash Barty in the first round.
But at least she got that centre court moment.
Yeah, definitely. So as world number one got to replace Simona in opening play on centre court on Tuesday. And absolutely incredible from Carla Suarez Navarro. She did a similar thing against Sloan at her Roland Garros match, actually. That was her final Roland Garros match. Where, so Ash Barty was 6-1 up, flying. I'm pretty sure she served for the match and set two at kind of 5-3, 5-4, one of those classic just single break ones. Then Carla fought back, took it to a tiebreak, dominated the tiebreak 7-1. She did lose the third set 6-1, but against Sloan at Roland Garros, started fighting back. I think looked like she could even win, and then Sloan fought back again. But yeah, I'm really happy she got the send off she deserved, especially after what happened at Roland Garros. Just the crowd knew as well, which was great, because I think sometimes with a high profile event like Wimbledon, you get a lot of people here that just go because it's Wimbledon, they go for the day out. They might not have heard of people like Carla, they might not know everything she's been through, they might not know she's retiring. And that, I think, 5-love or 5-1 in the final set, everyone just gave her this huge standing ovation. It was very Murray Bautista Agut, Australian Open. Everyone kind of knew it was the last one or two games of her singles career at Wimbledon, and just gave her the send-off she absolutely deserved. I'm so happy for her. You know, I think her and Ash have quite a good relationship, and it just was everything she deserved.
Yeah. And then also Kiki Burton's, her last, I mean, she announced her retirement on Instagram
season, yeah. I think, definitely before Wimbledon, said that she's decided this is going to be her final year on tour. I'm really sad to see her go. She's been such a huge inspiration for me. I think just with her off-court story is something that everyone can take from. She's been in my very, very small delve into media at tournaments, one of the nicest, one of my favourite people I've met and spoken to from the tennis world. I had her to lose her first round to young Ukrainian Marta Kostyuk, and she did, 6-3, 6-4. She was in the double, she lost today, so that breaks my heart a little bit, because I'm so sad she's retiring, and you know, it's the right thing for her to do for herself personally, but I'm sad she's retiring. I'm sad she hasn't had the hype Carla has. I understand why Carla has had her hype. It's so rightfully deserved. I just think Kiki hasn't had enough recognition of the fact that, oh my god, this was her last Wimbledon and she's gone.
I mean, she's still got the US.
Yeah, in terms of Wimbledon, this is it, and breaks my heart, but you're getting the credit you deserve here, Kiki.
Well, that's sort of it for the first two rounds of Wimbledon. We think we've touched on all the big talking points. Also, quickly, I'll just throw it in there. I'm sad the team's not here. Picked up a wrist injury in, I think it was Halle or Mallorca or one of them. And
yes, he was leading 5-2.
Yeah, 5-2, and he's now wearing a splint for 8 weeks, which is sad. He's pulling out the Olympics as well, and yeah, it'd have been good to see team back. He's obviously had a mixed year since he won his slam and since he lost his second consecutive final at the O2. But yeah, I mean, I'm sad for team, and I hope he can put up a good defence of his US Open. He's not going to retain it.
Oh god, no.
But yeah, I just thought I'd throw that in
there. Rafa's also not here. I think Rafa, so he's pulled out of Wimbledon, the Olympics, obviously lost to Djokovic at Roland Garros. We won't talk too much about that, but
I think everyone knows what Rafa's doing.
He's literally preserving himself for next year's Roland Garros. He's going to preserve his body for Roland Garros only, because it's a guaranteed slam.
He might not play again.
He honestly just might not play bar the clay. And the one thing I want to end on is, we have Denis Shapovalov and Andy Murray Friday night, last on Centre Court tomorrow. My dreams are coming true, everyone. It's my two favourites. I've never played each other. They're playing against each other. I personally think Andy's going to win because, one, the crowd. I think Denis will enjoy the crowd, even if they're against him. But Andy likes playing these, like, slowy, showy, flashy players. He likes playing the next gen and showing them who the F he is.
I mean, you think he beats Zverev?
He beats Zverev and Tiafoe at the
Cincinnati
that was held in New York. That's also the last time he won back-to-back tour matches until now. And even in terms of shot making, Andy's got it all. I do think Andy will probably relatively routine Denis. I'm so excited. We're not going to get too ahead of ourselves on predictions. We have been posting on Twitter and Instagram. Follow us. Our whole predictions for the whole tournament. We wrote out the whole bracket.
One of us had Tsitsipas in the final.
One of us had Kvitova Serena in the final, and they're both gone now.
Yeah, one of us is three predictions down.
Three finals down. I mean, if you can see all our predictions and the fact that shock, we've got them wrong again. But let's do one.
I'm doing okay.
Let's do one prediction on here to kind of, you know, just for the next round. Murray Shapovalov. I'm so excited. I have a ticket to Manic Monday, and I really wish I had a ticket to tomorrow instead. I'm so excited. I'm so happy it's happening. It's everything I deserve. It's everything I've been waiting for. It's everything Denis maybe has been waiting for, because he's one of them kids that grew up with Djokovic Murray finals like myself. And yeah, I think Murray's going to win in three or four quite easily. I'm so excited for the vibes.
I've got Denis winning it.
Well, on my bracket, I have Denis winning it. I had Murray coming through to this point and then losing to Denis. Now I think Murray's going to win. So yeah, we will be back potentially on Middle Sunday, but definitely ahead of the final to talk more about what's been going on, because there's been a lot in the first two rounds. Who knows what's going to happen over the next week?
Yeah, it's been a pretty manic Wimbledon, but I mean, for the first one back in 2 years, you couldn't really ask for anything
it's